国内。
This is Listening to Pictures, Artists on the SFU Art Collection, a radio program from SFU Galleries featuring voices of artists with lived experience on the West Coast who reflect on their favorite artists and works in the SFU Art Collection. And we're your hosts. I'm SFU Galleries Director Kimberly Phillips.
And I'm Publications and Special Projects Coordinator Karina Irvin. The SFU Art Collection consists of over 5,800 works and was established soon after the university's founding in 1965. The collection is unique in its capacity to trace the complex social and cultural life connected to this region and remains open to new inquiries and stories as they surface.
For Listening to Pictures, we invited artists to select a work from the collection and consider why it is meaningful to them, to reflect upon the memories or associations it calls up, the relationships it maps, and the political and cultural context from which it emerged. An accompanying suite of limited edition cards, each picturing one of the selected artworks, which you can order from SFU Gallery's website, is offered as a visual reference while listening.
All recordings were developed by the artists themselves, resulting in unique approaches to the artworks they chose, from lecture-style meditations and poetic tributes to political commentary and collaborative sonic experiments. Each invited artist's response, then, is a creative extension of their own practice.
This program was inspired by a 1964 CBC radio program of the same name, hosted by the renowned art historian Dr. Jean Sutherland Boggs. To find out more about the program, download episode transcripts, image descriptions, or other resources, or to subscribe to receive a set of printed cards, visit our website at sfugalleries.sfu.ca.
In this ninth episode of Listening to Pictures, we hear from Kara Ditte Hansen and Stephanie Ling on Ken Lum's Youth Portraits from 1985. This work is an offset lithograph on newsprint, which is comprised of a grid with 16 photographic portraits of youth, ranging from infants to young adults from various social and cultural backgrounds. This work was originally installed as part of a series spray-mounted to the walls of Vancouver's Cobourg Gallery, which existed from 1983 to 1987.
Kara Ditte Hansen is an artist and filmmaker. She is a master's student in the Cinematic Arts program at the University of Milwaukee in Wisconsin. She loves all things pickled. Stephanie Ling is an occasional critic and regular reader of Marx. She is a current graduate student in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Simon Fraser University. Hansen and Ling attended the same high school in Calgary, Alberta.
Greetings, listeners. Welcome to this edition of Listening to Pictures. We are Steph Huitzeling.
And I'm Kara Hansen.
For this episode, we're chatting about Ken Lum's Youth Portraits from 1985. Kara, you want to say a few things about the artwork?
Sure. The youth portraits that we encounter from SFU's collection is a grid made up of 16 black and white staged photographs of youth ranging from infants to young adults. They're photographed at different angles, but more often than not, they're shot from below. Their features are hopeful as they look off into some unknown future. Ken Lum made this work while he was still a student, studying for his master's in fine arts at University of British Columbia. So this style of portrait photography is known as social realism, which aimed to depict the real-life conditions of working-class people, to critique the structures of power behind them. These photographs reflect images taken by Russian artist Alexander Rodchenko, specifically a portrait titled The Pioneer Girl from 1930. Multiples of Ken Lum's youth portraits were printed cheaply on newsprint paper when it was installed in 1985 at the Cobourg Gallery. The individual images were cut out of the grid and pasted in loose clusters onto the walls. From exhibition documentation, the walls appear like constellations made of small, optimistic faces with vast, empty white space between them. We asked Ken what the negative space of the wall meant to him. He told us it was the aspirations and countenance of the youth. We also asked him if there was any cynicism or irony in the work, and he emphasized that his work is earnest and not meant to be ironic at all. Youth Portraits was first shown at Coburg Gallery, as we mentioned, a commercial photo gallery that was owned and run by Bill Jeffries, who later became the director-curator at SFU Galleries from 2005 to 2012, and he also gifted this work to the collection in 2017. Ken Lum grew up in Vancouver's Strathcona neighborhood and became interested in art as a student in high school, where he was asked to design yearbook covers and banners for school events. At this time, his class was learning about the enlarged comic book style paintings of Roy Lichtenstein, and the assignment was to make a Lichtenstein-inspired watercolor painting. Ken chose to reinterpret a traumatic image of a car bombing victim from the Vancouver Sun newspaper. The art teacher thought Ken's artistic gesture was completely inappropriate and was told he would not be able to progress into grade 10 art. Later in university, he studied mathematics and sciences and worked as a lab assistant in a research station for the British Columbia Ministry of Agriculture. He also had a part-time job designing posters for the Vancouver Public Library and worked for his former neighbor sign painting for stores such as Safeway. He enrolled in an evening art class at Simon Fraser University, taught by Jeff Wall, and could not read enough about art and art history. Regularly attending the Vague Library, he met a senior artist who had decided to pursue art after retirement. She told him that he had no choice but to make the full leap into art. So thereafter, Ken Lum quit the lab and enrolled in the MFA at UBC and never looked back. Steph, can you tell the audience why we chose the work and why we spoke to Ken?
So I think that we were drawn to Youth Portraits, or at least I was drawn to Youth Portraits because it seemed more immune to the sort of more uptight readings of conceptual art that we were socialized to develop when we were as art students. And I think by nature of its material being newsprint and glue and how the subjects are portrayed, it would feel maybe a bit disingenuous to project a whole lot of art history onto it, even though there is a conversation we could be having about social realism, like you mentioned before. So we had this idea of talking to Ken because, for me, this work really provoked memories of being a student. So in that nostalgic spiral, I remember thinking that artists were like these people in far off places doing brilliant things, and we couldn't talk to them, but they are just regular people working at the school in cafes, washing windows, and struggling to pay bills and what have you, at least some of them, maybe most of them. So yeah, I thought working artists had maybe, like at the time when we were students, we were thinking of working artists as people who'd actually transcended working class society and would have nothing to do with us, even though you and I have working class and middle class backgrounds, or at least I think of myself as coming from a working class background with middle class optics, or growing up with middle class optics. So Ken was very forthcoming about his background and a lot of his work and text, so I thought to myself that we should try to look past the fact that we were intellectually distanced and raised to put this person on somewhat of a pedestal and try to have a more regular conversation with them about their work and, you know, the way it should be possible to just talk to anyone about their job. So what did you think about broaching the conversation with Ken?
I was a bit nervous to talk to Ken because even though we know that he's just a human being and being an artist is his job and he also teaches, it's hard not to feel like a fangirl just because he was so much a part of our education at Emily Carr. But it was really nice. We met his whole family, and it was really humbling to hear that he was more interested in learning about us and our backgrounds than talking about his own work. And I just wanted to see if he spoke in the same way that he writes, because he writes in such an accessible and conversational way about his work and his experience in the arts, and it just doesn't lose any of its poignancy. So, yeah. Can you tell me what Youth Portraits reminded you of, or what it made you think of or feel?
Yeah, so it's sort of funny talking to you like this because we've been friends for a really, really long time, and we're just trying to keep it cool for you listeners. But yeah, like Carr and I went to high school together, and then we also ended up going, we went to high school together, and then I ended up going to a different, graduating from a different high school in a different city, but then we like found each other again when we started going to Emily Carr. In 2019? Sorry, 2009. Time. So I like Youth Portraits, and I like talking to you about it because it reminds me of being a student and having friends like you and lots of other people that I would love to shout out but maybe don't have time and room here to do, to mature and creatively and spiritually mature with. And it reminded me of that time and being a little bit less burdened with expectations about the relationship between art and politics, which is largely what haunts me now. So Youth Portraits has the opposite effects of some of his other works that are more canonical. For example, like Melly Shum Hates Her Job, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. And I wouldn't say that my affinity for Youth Portraits is motivated by nostalgia or anything like that, but it has a sort of future-oriented quality to it with respect to that aspect of the negative space and the installation, or in its installation format, that Ken talked about when we were conversing with him. Right now, Kara and I are both students again, doing our graduate studies, myself in sociology and Kara in cinematic
arts.
Thank you. We're still very tight friends, collaborating and maturing, but I think I will probably still need more work in terms of tempering my expectations of art. But then when Ken was talking about how there is this expectation that art should have a punchline or offer some sort of social irony, which are not exactly the same expectations that I'm talking about, but we're talking about expectations nonetheless. He also talked about how he wasn't trying to meet that expectation with this work, and I remember thinking when we were art students that we couldn't make anything sincere or non-ironic. We could only make smart or technically well-executed things. I mean, I think it's nice to mention the East Van Cross because it's like, we like lived with his artwork.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
When Steph and I were art students, we thought that we couldn't engage with art sincerely. So we weren't making sincere work. So we were just missing the connection altogether. So midway through our undergraduate studies at Emily Carr, the East Van Cross was installed on Clark Drive, which was just in view of our first apartment together. And 1 year later, there was a Ken Lum retrospective at the VAG that coincided with the Vancouver Olympics, as well as the Occupy protests. And I participated in the Occupy marches and chanting, while also attending Lum's retrospective in the same square block radius. But reflecting on this moment, we recalled how the distancing of our art education actually prevented us from emotionally connecting the working class subjects in Ken's work to the chants that we repeated on the streets. As youthful and keen art students, we were just unable to meaningfully connect the movement of this moment in Vancouver with the artists and artwork we were learning about. Steph, can you tell us a bit about what you remember from our phone call with Ken?
Right. So while we were talking to Ken, he said some pretty lucid things that I feel like are worth repeating here. Because I feel like simple things are usually lucid after they follow a period of complication or overthinking, which is something we're all very good at as the result of our art education. So we actually spent most of our time speaking with him not just about Youth Portraits, or mostly not about Youth Portraits. I don't know. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, anyway, some of the things he said ultimately just made me feel less jaded because he said that the art world is not a monolith and that we should draw from the totality of the art world what matters to you. Because, yeah, generally I think we do see a lot of things that we don't like and we just kind of maybe want to kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater, I guess you could say. But I think we like art. Maybe we just don't like some of the things we see in the art world. And I think that that's like an important way to stay connected to art and find different ways to connect with it. Like I think we've realized, you know, in the sort of like last few years as we've become slightly like, I don't know, just like softer in our engagements with art. So I just don't really think that what happens in the art world is ultimately going to inform what happens to politics on the global scale. So I'm not out here trying to change the art world. I have tried. And ultimately, the barriers and obstacles I encounter from doing that is actually coming more from the work to be done with broader political consciousness raising. So another part of talking to Ken that I remember was when you outed me as a Marxist. And we segued into inquiring about his unrealized public artwork, which was called Monument to the Victims of Communism, which would have been commissioned by the government of Canada. Anyway, it's basically a sculpture of Lenin that is like frozen in the moment of being toppled at like a 45 degree angle. And he said some interesting things about it being midfall that I thought were really eloquent. But I think the best thing he said was, well, what about a monument to the victims of capitalism? And I couldn't agree more. So, yeah, I don't know. What did you think of, or what do you remember, some greatest hits from our conversation?
I liked his story about his stacked furniture sculptures. I think he called them Tower of Love or Tower of Love seats from 1987. And he said it was mouse infested and how the mice ran wild in his studio. And it just made me think about my first studio in Hastings in Maine and all my naive ambitions about what would happen after my education. And it just makes me think of the negative space in youth portraits. There'd be a lot of negative space around my portrait. But yeah, talking in general with Ken made me feel less embittered, and I was reminded that I'm constantly re-engineering what I want to do and what world I want to learn from. I guess his work just really makes me feel empathy, and I think what's most important for me in art is to feel something.
Hell yeah.
So, tell me about your favorite Ken Lum work.
So, my favorite Ken Lum work is definitely, and probably obviously, Melly Shum Hates Her Job. In 2020, I was in Rotterdam, and I bought a postcard of a photograph of the work installed on the side of the Wit de Wit. Now it's called Kunstinstitut Melly. There was also a small, like, vitrine exhibition of materials related to the organization of Ken's exhibition in 1991. And in one of those documents on the vitrine, I read this description that he had written and, like, faxed to the Melly. And it said that Melly is also a picture of my mother, or something like that. I think I'm slightly, like, paraphrasing. But yeah, Melly is also a picture of his mother. And I pinned this postcard up at my desk at work in a very prominent place so that whenever I looked at it, I non-hatefully thought of my hatred of work, my silence of my hatred of work, and my mother. It reminded me that hating work was not just something I was experiencing, but probably a lot of people were, and how that feeling is important to remember when we're feeling alone in our disdain for work. So mothers especially work extremely hard, but tend to hide how much they do or if they dislike it, especially from their children. In Ken's description, he relays an anecdote from his childhood where he describes seeing his mother at the laundromat where she worked, and she was joking with her coworkers. But once on a particularly hard day, she betrayed her hatred of her job to Ken in, like, this, like, quiet mutter. So Melly's hatred of her job was also very grounding, because we have this kind of work culture where we're supposed to love or show gratitude for being in our jobs because of its proximity to art and culture, which are generally considered leisurely engagements. So this leaves us open to rationalizing a lot of exploitation and self-exploitation, because we also have to come across as very psyched about our jobs or our gigs because of how elusive opportunities can be. I don't want to assume that everyone hates their job, and I'm genuinely glad for people who like what they do for work, but I think it's a sentiment that most people can get on with or be in solidarity with, because, well, especially among working class people, and I think that is a really difficult thing for contemporary works of art to sincerely achieve. So in this sense, Melly Shum is not just a picture of his mother or my mother, but a lot of smiling, alienated workers who are silently hating their jobs. What's your favorite work, Kara?
My favorite Ken Lum works are the Portrait Repeated Text series, but just for the sake of listeners who might want to refresh their memory in person, you can bike or drive to Strathcona, and right by Trillium Park is a two-panel work called A Tale of Two Children, a work for Strathcona. In this series, in general, in the Portrait Repeated Text series, there is a stage photograph with text on a color field beside it. The colors of the text and background are often referenced in the photograph. For instance, in A Tale for Two Children, there is a photograph of a white boy in black jeans and a blue t-shirt, bracing his anxious body up against a red fire hydrant. Beside the photograph on a red background, in dark blue text, it reads his inner monologue. What an idiot! What an idiot you are! What an utterly useless idiot you are! The panel beside has a stage photograph of an Asian girl sitting on a green bench, and an adult in a pink blouse stands behind her, looking into the child's eyes as she places a reinforcing hand on her shoulder. On a green background in pale pink text reads the adult's encouraging words, "You are so smart. You make me so proud. You so smart. I so proud you so smart." For me, these works function like stills from documentary movies. We witness the emotional lives in the everyday consciousness of these made-up but very realistic people. There are often moments where an individual is having a personal crisis, or doubt over their self-worth. In this work, for instance, we experience the boy full of shame, and while the girl is seemingly encouraged, we also intuit the enormous expectations this adult must have for her. So yeah, maybe it's silly, but I totally believe that these portrait repeated text works are snapshots that destigmatize mental health and just like internal struggles in general, and they just really hit me in the heart and in the gut.
That was really nice, Kara.
Thanks. And that concludes our conversation on Youth Portraits 1985 by Ken Lem. Thanks for listening.
Shout out to Kim and Karina at SFU for giving us this opportunity. And now Kara will acknowledge the readings that have informed our conversation.
So thank you to Ken for writing Everything is Relevant, Writings on Art and Life, 1991 to 2018. And that was published by Concordia University Press, Montreal. Also, the Vancouver Art Gallery's Ken Lem exhibition catalog with writings by Grant Arnold, Aquian Weezer, and Roland Shoney. And also the beautiful publication that Steph has that was published by the Wit to Wit, now known as the Kunstinstitut Melle.
Winnipeg Art Gallery was also
involved. And Winnipeg Art Gallery. Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
This podcast was organized by Kimberly Phillips and Karina Irvin at SFU Galleries with audio production by Jean Paizeau. The accompanying image cards were designed by Information Office. Listening to Pictures has been made possible with generous support from the Canada Council for the Arts Digital Now program and is produced in partnership with CJSF FM. SFU Galleries is supported by Simon Fraser University, the Canada Council for the Arts, and the BC Arts Council, along with numerous foundations, community partners, donors, and volunteers. We are especially grateful for the visionary support of the Marianne and Edward Gibson Trust.